Welcome to Hardball Times Audio, your weekly stop for baseball's biggest stories, past and present, with your hosts, Jen Mac Ramos, Sarah Wexler, and Mary Craig. How are you all doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing all right.
Yeah, I'm just, watching terrible pitching right now in the Sox game, but going well so far.
The Sox squared game, then.
Yeah. It's been a long one.
Well, the Dodger bullpen just gave up a run for the first time in, 20 some odd innings. So turns out that they're human after all.
Yeah, Todd Frazier hit a 2-run homer off of Chris Sale. So he's also very much human.
I don't even want to talk about the Giants.
Oh, we will talk about
I know we will. That's inevitable.
Yeah.
Okay. We will get there eventually, but the first thing that we're going to do on this podcast every week, we are going to discuss the previous week's Hardball Times articles. We run an article every day of the week. We're going to start with Monday, a very good place to start. So last week's piece was by Shane Tortolode. The title was Tarnish, the worst performances winning the biggest awards. So the concept behind this piece is to highlight some of the least deserving and flukiest award winners in baseball history. Shane first focuses on the former, creating a roster of the worst MVP seasons by position, while also creating a rotation from the five worst Cy Young starting pitching selections and featuring a reliever as well. For the flukiest award winners, he does a similar exercise, but rather than focus on individual seasons, he finds the least valuable careers that have merited an award-winning season. He judges value looking at both Baseball References and Fangraph's version of WAR. We can see from this that there is a long history of the MVP award being given, not for the best season necessarily, but with undue weight being placed on how a player's team fared in a given season. And while this is something that we still do see today sometimes, based on Shane's piece, it kind of seems like it doesn't happen quite as frequently. So progress is being made. That's good to see. So on the subject of awards, both the MVP and the Cy Young Award, do we have any opinions on certain award robberies or undeserving awards that really kind of stick out to us?
Okay, I have one. Jen, you might get mad at this, but Barry Zito winning the Cy Young in 2002 over Pedro, I'm not on board with that.
I am also not on board with that, actually. I don't think that Zito pitched better than Pedro. I think that was a total fluke, and while Zito may have had a great year in 2002, I don't think he was worthy of the Cy Young.
No, it was definitely one of those, like, the team did well, and he had the most wins, and he pitched well, so let's just give it to him.
Pitcher wins are so useless as a stat. Yeah, and I think the criteria back then was just, who had the most wins, who was on a winning team, and they just didn't look at all the different stats that were, probably weren't around back then. But obviously, Pedro is the better pitcher in that, not only lifetime, but also that season. And Zito was just a huge albatross following that.
Well, certainly it seems that what's going to stand out on a personal level is when members of your own team get robbed. Still, even though Matt Kemp isn't even a Dodger anymore, I still am kind of annoyed about Ryan Braun winning the MVP over him in 2011. Any year that Kershaw hasn't won the Cy Young, I feel like, since like 2012, I guess, I feel like I can make a case that he should have won it. Looking historically, I'm kind of amazed at the 1974 MVP season. Steve Garvey won in the National League with a 4.4 baseball reference WAR, and Jeff Burrows won in the AL with a 3.6 WAR. I think that's probably the lowest combined WAR of any particular year. I haven't verified that, but it would surprise me if that weren't the case. Burrows is actually highlighted in Shane's piece as part of the second roster, actually. And another thing that I guess I would have to quibble with is anytime a reliever wins the MVP. Like, I think relievers should only win the Cy Young Award in the case of really kind of preposterously amazing seasons where no starter really stands out. So to try and argue that there's any year where a reliever was actually the most valuable player in a league, that is something I can't really get behind.
Yeah. One thing that isn't necessarily a player winning an award, but a player still getting a Cy Young vote is Jeremy Affeldt getting a Cy Young vote in, I believe, 2010. And I am still very mad about that because he just wasn't worthy of one Cy Young vote. He should not get of any, really. And I know I'm a Giants fan, but that just was such a homer vote. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you're definitely proving your objectivity right off the bat. So that's good for you, Jen.
And then I guess probably one of the more recent controversial ones, well, I guess it was 11 years ago, so not that recent, but was Justin Morneau winning the MVP in 2006, when he wasn't even the best player on his own team.
Right. Yeah.
And it probably should have gone to any one of Maurer, Jeter, or David Ortiz or any of those guys. And I think that was kind of like the first instance where I like really started to look into awards and was like, wow, most of the voters are really dumb.
Well, it's good to see that as baseball fans, we literally never get over these things, you know, things that happened from before we were even born, we're still upset about. And I think that is truly the spirit of baseball fandom right there.
It works well because I'm a petty person, so I chose the right sport.
Yeah, no, this is a great outlet for that, definitely. Okay, so I think now it's time to move on to the second article of the week. Tuesday, we ran an article by Ryan Pollock. More plate coverage isn't necessarily better. So the title tells you a lot of what's happening here. Basically, Pollock is debunking the conventional wisdom that being able to cover a lot of the plate as a hitter will lead to more success. To quote the author, with too little plate coverage, pitchers can easily sneak pitches past you. With too much coverage, you put balls into play that you shouldn't, and there's a sweet spot in the middle. But just because I've basically given you the conclusion there, the article is still worth a read to see how the author approaches this problem, figures it out, and to see the player examples that he uses. It's a really interesting read. Looking to Wednesday now, John Pascal has written a piece entitled Coffee Sippers, Those Who Played One Game. This is the pitcher edition of this. Later, we'll do a position player version. So basically, in this article, John Pascal examines the history of pitchers who made just one career appearance at the major league level. Coming into this season, 526 pitchers have been credited with a single major league mound appearance. This is something that happens for a number of reasons. In the past, it's often because of consecutive doubleheaders. That's not something we see so much anymore. Sometimes it's because a guy underperforms and that he just never gets another shot after that, or he gets hurt and that's an end to his career. There's plenty of reasons, and you can see some more of those in very specific examples in the article. So this is another topic that I wanted to discuss with you too. Have any of us watched any coffee sipper games, focusing on pitchers here? And a lot of them have come before our time as fans, so I know that eliminates a lot of them. And also, there's plenty of people who have currently appeared in one game, but, you know, their careers aren't over. They likely might get another shot at some point. So I know that that makes it a little tricky to answer, but with that said, have we watched any such games?
I don't think I have, not that I can remember. But yeah. I think they might be like less frequent now.
Oh yeah, that definitely seems to be the case. Baseball Reference has a list and they seemed considerably more frequent prior to the past, I guess, couple of decades or so. So it does seem to be a trend that's changing.
Yeah, just looking through this list, they have Charlie Zink, who was with the Red Sox in 2008, only threw 4.1 innings, and I remember him as a knuckleballer. But he ended up finishing that game, you know, with a 16.62 ERA, which small sample size. But he gave up about 8 runs in those 4 1/3 innings. And that's the one that I vividly remember a lot. Just remember seeing, oh, hey, it's, you know, the Red Sox's second knuckleball pitcher on the team, how is he going to do? Is he anywhere close to being like Tim Wakefield? And no,
No.
he was not.
Yeah,
we tend to hoard knuckleballers, but that one didn't work out for us. Sorry, Charlie.
As for me, scrolling through the list, a name that jumped out at me was Red Patterson. He pitched a game for the Dodgers in 2014, went 4.2 innings, only gave up one run on two hits and three walks while striking out one. He went back to the minors after that. He was in their system, I think, until 2016 and is now currently a free agent. His career isn't necessarily over, but it doesn't look great at this point. But interestingly, apparently Red Patterson is one of seven Reds to be a coffee sipper, as John notes in the article. So thought that was kind of interesting.
That makes me sad because Red seems like it's such a perfect baseball name.
It is, and you, oh my gosh. So you have to look up this guy and look at his most recent minor league official photo. His beard is something else. I know that this is a podcast and just saying that. You know, I wish I could show you, but you'll have to do the looking up
Oh my
yourself.
goodness. Yeah, so I just looked it up and it's definitely a must-see.
Yes.
You don't see many like that in baseball or life unless you are Amish.
Well, it's too bad that he only got the one game. His beard did not look like that at that point, but alas. Okay, so let's go to Thursday's article now. This is by Paul Swiden. He wrote an article entitled Baseball at the Movies, Captain America, the First Avenger. This was published on the 76th anniversary of a Dodger broadcast that was featured in that movie. The broadcast was not an authentic one. It was replicated for the sake of the movie, but it was based on a real game and was fun to read. I haven't actually seen the movie, to be totally honest, but I still enjoy pieces that attempt to track down games featured or mentioned in works of fiction. I remember once reading an article that tried to find the date in Ice Cube song, It Was a Good Day. They try to do this based in part on the fact that he mentioned that the Lakers won that day. So not quite the same thing, but kind of a similar idea, I guess. I think it's a fun concept. Paul does a great job with it. Even if you haven't seen the movie, it's a lot of fun. So, on a kind of similar subject, I'm wondering, do we have any favorite examples of baseball games in not necessarily baseball-focused works of fiction?
Oh man, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I feel like everything I read or watch is either completely sports related or nothing to do with sports.
Yeah, I don't really watch a lot of fiction. I guess like for me, I'm not proud of this, but it would definitely be Field of Dreams just for the shots of Fenway.
That's totally fair.
And not Field of Dreams, what's it called?
Oh, Fever Pitch?
Fever Pitch.
Okay. Well, they do go to Fenway in Field of Dreams, don't
They
they?
do. That's
Yeah.
true.
Okay.
Actually,
So
never seen Field of Dreams, so.
I feel like opinion is kind of divided on this. I love it. It makes me cry. I don't care. Judge me for that. But I think it's worth a watch for any baseball fan.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of indifferent about Field of Dreams. I think it's a good movie, but it's also not like my favorite one, but I do think of it as a good movie.
I've just heard so much about it, and it just seems like it's such a huge part of like the mystique of baseball and being a baseball fan. And like I hate most things, so I'm afraid that if I watch it, I'll just be like, oh my God, like why do so many people like this? And they'll just like ruin something about baseball for me. So I'm like, I'll just stay away.
Yeah, it can be when something is hyped up like that. I know it can be sort of difficult to psych yourself into watching it because you just know that it probably won't live up to the expectations that have been set for it. But I'm gonna say you should watch it. You know, just if the opportunity arises, it's worth a watch, I think. Just to get back to the discussion question, my answer for this is Vin Scully made a cameo in my favorite X-Files episode. It's called The Unnatural. It's in season 6. And it's not a real broadcast. It's one that he recorded specifically for the show. Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files, is a big Dodger fan growing up. And he named Agent Scully's character after Vin. He named her later partner after Vin's longtime partner, Jerry Doggett. So, you know, there's that going throughout the course of the show. And then they actually got Vin. I found out they wanted to get him to do this for this episode, which is focused on baseball. But he, at first, they had issues because of budget concerns. But then Vin agreed to do it for free. And I thought that was really cool.
Actually, now that I think of it, I'm reminded of Deep Space Nine, where they had an episode, kind of like a fictionalized version of like San Francisco Giants uniforms on Deep Space Nine, the spaceship, and they were playing baseball in like Holosuite, which is kind of, you know, all holograms, and they were trying to, Captain Sisko was trying to explain the concept of baseball to a lot of aliens, which I found interesting.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I don't remember that. But I've seen all of Deep Space Nine. but
I think it was an entire episode in like the sixth season.
Okay. So, I think I, but yeah, I'll have to go back and look. So I guess for me, I'm throwing in another answer here, is not, you know, an actual cameo of a player, but it's definitely the Easter egg in Parks and Rec with the Baybip, Pacote, Warp, and Eckstein law.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a great one. I just love that it's all stats and then Eckstein.
Yeah.
it's perfect. You know, something that any baseball fan who cares about stats will appreciate.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's a very niche type joke, but I obviously we all appreciated it. Decent subset of baseball Twitter seemed to appreciate it. So nicely done, Ken Tremendous. All right. So on that note, let's move on to this week's final article. On Friday, ahead of Memorial Day weekend, we ran an article entitled Remembering the First Major Leaguer to Die in War by Mike Bates. It's a really lovely tribute to Eddie Grant, the first confirmed major leaguer to have been killed in war. Eddie served in World War I as a captain in H Company of the 307th Infantry Regiment of the 77th Division of the U.S. Army. Grant played in Major League Baseball for 10 seasons and for four different teams, the Cleveland Naps, the Philadelphia Phillies, the Cincinnati Reds, and the New York Giants. In addition to exploring Grant's playing career, Bates delves into Grant's personal life from his time both as an undergrad and in law school at Harvard to his marriage and widowership up until his decision to enlist. It was, you know, nice, timely reading for Memorial Day, but it's a story that's worth checking out really at any time. So that was last week's stories. Jen, do you want to talk to us about what's coming up this week?
Yeah, so today, Kolya Ilarionovna, I'm completely sorry if I'm butchering this name, wrote a story on whether managers should use their challenges. So that was up today, which Tuesday, if you're listening to this on another day of the week. Wednesday, Brian Reinhart is writing about the Frisco Rough Riders Cat Night. On Thursday, we have Eli Ben Porat's What If LeBron Wanted to Play Baseball Just in Time for Game 1 of the NBA Finals. And on Friday, part 2 of John Pascal's Coffee Sippers series will be published then, and this one is on position players. So, Mary, you want to talk about what's going on in the world of baseball now?
Yeah, so I thought that we would start off with talking about how Homer Simpson was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So it was basically because of one episode, Homer at the Bat, that I'm assuming everyone's probably seen.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, and I was just wondering, because I think that this is, you know, something that's seems like it's out of character for Major League Baseball to have done, because they've attached so much prestige to the Hall of Fame, and this seems like it's more of a fun thing and in that way surprising. But I was wondering if you guys had any sort of fantasies for if you would like a major leaguer to appear in a Simpsons episode. Or just in general, like what your favorite baseball player appearance is on a show and whether you think that that might be a Hall of Fame worthy performance.
Major leaguers to see in a Simpsons episode. think Hunter Pence would probably be a great candidate. Just I'm trying to imagine him Simpsonized, and he's already so bizarre that I think he would just lend himself really well to cartoon form, and I think he would probably have a lot of fun with that.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of different players, and I think I would actually love to see Yasiel Puig as a Simpson. I just feel like that would be a lot of fun.
It's fun that the Giants fan picked the Dodger player and the Dodger fan picked the Giants player.
I love what's going on here. But yeah, I think Puig would be awesome as a cartoon character on The Simpsons. I think that there's just so much potential, that one. And I think maybe, you know, not a current player, but I think Alex Rodriguez as a broadcaster would be very dynamic as a cartoon.
Yeah, he would. I can't say anything bad about him. He's fine now. He's got a good personality, I guess.
So says the Red Sox fan.
Just at least you didn't say Jeter.
I don't think Jeter has the personality to be a cartoon. No. I feel like he's a little bit more manufactured in the sense that, like, everything is very calculated as far as how he speaks, what he says, his appearances. I think A-Rod just has more of the personality for a cartoon character.
Yeah, I think he'd be more up for making fun of himself, too.
Yeah. Definitely. To answer the other question about favorite baseball player appearances on a show, have either of you ever seen the clip of the 1963 Dodgers on Mr. Ed?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That is incredible to me. Just the fact that they had, you know, Sandy Koufax, Leo DeRocher, Johnny Roseborough, Willie Davis, Vin Scully, again, makes an appearance. You know, Mr. Ed hits a home run off of Sandy Koufax. He slides into home. Johnny Roseborough goes climbing up on the backstop. It's absurd. And I'm obsessed with it. I'm just so glad that it's a thing that happens.
Mine would probably have to be, and Sarah, you'll probably appreciate this, is Wade Boggs on Cheers.
Oh, yes. Good choice.
Just because it was so absurd, and like Wade Boggs seems like he has no idea what's going on in the show, and I just loved it a lot.
Yeah, he was great. In general, the baseball stuff on Cheers, it's one of my favorite things about that show. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fun stuff that I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, that one was also going to be my answer.
Well, I'm glad that we're all on the same page on that.
Yeah. All right. So if we don't have any more for that, I thought that it might be fun. I think probably at this point, beating a dead horse, but that's never stopped anyone before. If we could do a little breakdown of the Bryce Harper baseball fight.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. So first off, it started over a 3-year grudge, which is pretty ridiculous.
Going back to what we said earlier about, you know, baseball being a good sport for petty people, this was one of the most prime examples of pettiness in baseball.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's like your team won the World Series.
And you're still mad that a guy, you know, it's took like, you deep.
Like, you're like, no, I'm going to get this one guy.
Do we think that Bryce overreacted a little? You know, I think it's possible he did, but I also think that, you know, Strickland was in the wrong. And as people have noted, if Harper doesn't charge the mound, then Strickland doesn't get punished. So it's too bad that it had to come to blows. But
and I just think, you know, at this point in his career, Harper has been through a lot. And so, like, you know, if he wants to charge the mound once, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not too, like, hand-wringy over this. Just in part because there was just so much ridiculous that took place over the course of this brawl. I don't even know which is my favorite thing. You know, there's, well, it's a little bit less funny now, but Morse and Samardzija colliding.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you know, landed Morse on the TL with a concussion, which is not great, but it's just kind of, it's, the gif is just amazing. Just, they're really trying to break it up and they just run into each other, and it's It's ridiculous.
I think my favorite part is, like, Posey just kind of hanging in the back, yep. like, I know I'm going to get suspended if I get into this, and I don't want that to happen, and I don't want to get concussed again, so I'm just going to hang back here.
Yeah, Strickland is a big, angry dude, and he can take care of himself. As we saw, it took, like, seven Giants to drag him off the field, and he was fighting them the entire way into the dugout, so
yeah,
he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should be fine. And I was actually kind of impressed that, like, even though I know he's on the DL, like, we didn't really see Bumgarner get into that brawl at all. And I know he's probably not wanting to, like, re-injure himself, but at the same time, it's like, all right, that's a different side of Bumgarner. And I know Bumgarner is also a very angry dude.
Oh, you know, he was just dying to get out there, though.
Oh, he totally was. He had to have been.
I imagine he's going to hit somebody on that team next time he pitches against them and just, like, start this whole thing again.
I'd be very surprised if that did not happen. Although, last I checked, everyone seemed to be behaving tonight. I have not been on Twitter for a little while, so if all hell has broken loose, then, you know, I take it back. But it seems like everyone is doing as they should right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
I guess nobody wants to get suspended.
Yeah, and Strickland got 6 games for throwing at Harper and the fight, and then Harper got 4 games. But I will say that no one can toss a helmet just like Bryce Harper.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on that. And how did it, like, why did it go that way? It was like a frisbee.
Yeah, I think because, and I forget who tweeted about this, but I think it was because he was holding it by the brim and not like ear flap or something. So I think it just, like, slipped out of his hand, like, right at the last moment as he was releasing it.
Yeah, it's hilarious to watch.
It really is. Yeah. And then I love all the, like, the theories that, you know, it was intentional misdirection.
Like, yeah, I'm sure Bryce's head was totally in the moment. Like,
he totally tried to turn it into a 50 cent first pitch, clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right, yeah. It was all intentional. do we agree with how the suspensions were doled out, though? You know, 6 games for Strickland, 4 for Harper. Does that seem equitable based on their roles in the brawl, or what do we think?
Not remotely.
Yeah.
No. I feel like Harper should have gotten a little bit less, considering that, you know, Strickland instigated it. But, you know, that's just me. I feel like Strickland should have gotten a little bit more than 6 games. You know, trying to throw someone like that. And he's a hard thrower. He can throw, like, 97, 98. That could have broken a rib. That could have broken a knee, you know?
Yeah.
That, and for over a 3-year grudge, that's just absurd. I feel like, yeah, it's just, I don't think that grudges like that, you know, while baseball can be a petty sport, that's just a new low of pettiness. And I think, like, the only reason why he probably wouldn't get sent down to AAA or DFA'd is just because the Giants' bullpen is so terrible.
That's true. That is true.
That they don't really have any other options. But I definitely agree that, you know, that kind of toxicity, you know, has no place in a clubhouse. That kind of mindset doesn't really work well in terms of, like, public relations or even just having a good look to the team.
Yeah, you saw when he was getting dragged off the field, he ended up kind of getting his hand in Hunter Pence's face. And the fact that he would allow his anger over this situation to end up getting sort of taken out on his own teammates, that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all.
And I think that you kind of have to start punishing the teams in some way in order to kind of corral this sort of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously losing 4 games of Harper is a lot more damaging to the Nationals than losing, what, like, 3-4 innings of Strickland?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, position players versus pitchers, whether it's a starter or a reliever, it doesn't really work the same way. You know, I understand that, you know, an inning from a pitcher and an inning from a position player, I understand that those have different values and are evaluated differently. but nonetheless, it doesn't seem equitable based on, you know, what they did. And I do think that Strickland's punishment needed to be more severe, because otherwise, what incentive do pitchers have to not do stuff like this in the future?
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100%.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And it just seems like the MLB got this so backwards in this case.
Yeah. The thing about suspensions is they're so arbitrary in general, and I don't know how, I guess it's not really possible to make uniform suspensions for most things, because often it is a case of judgment and taking into account the specific situation. So I don't know exactly how you go about improving this, but it's, yeah, the priorities seem out of line.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And there just seems like in certain instances they take into account prior history, and then in others they don't. Mm-hmm. And I never understand when that's applicable and when it's not.
Right.
Yeah, it just feels all so arbitrary and doesn't make a lot of sense. And I feel like, at the very least, get some kind of policy in order when these things are evaluated.
Definitely.
All right, any other thoughts on that?
I think one of the things that I want to know from you guys is, which is the weirdest baseball brawl you've seen in your lifetime? Because this one was pretty weird with Smarja kind of clotheslining Morse. And I'm just wondering, like, have you guys seen any completely bizarre brawls?
I don't know if this is, like, that bizarre, but my favorite is Coco Crisp versus James Shields in 2008, where Coco charges the mound and does some, like, insane Matrix move because he was a box. Avoids Shields' punch, and then so that all goes down, and then like out comes Sean Casey, and he like doesn't even hit anybody and gets suspended because he like made a punching motion or like something weird like that. And I just remember Red Sox fans being like so enraged by that, being like, how dare they do that to Sean Casey, like the nicest baseball player to have ever existed. Like, of course he was not going to punch anyone. And then I want to throw out a historical one, if I can. Just, like, the craziest thing you could possibly imagine. So it was a game between Baltimore and Boston in 1894. And it was between the Orioles' John McGraw and Boston's third baseman, Tommy Tucker. And so they start fighting, and then, like, it spreads to the stands, and then there's some debate over what happened next, whether, you know, loose fireworks got off or some fan set, like, a peanut bag on fire. But essentially, like, the whole stadium was aflame, and it spread to, like, a bunch of other buildings in Boston and just, like, burnt things to a crisp.
Wow.
Yeah.
That
I think that tops anything that any of us have probably ever seen. The brawl I was going to reference was from last season, the infamous Bumgarner Puig don't look at me incident.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I just, Dodger fans loved that. I can't even begin to tell you how much that took off in that circle. You know, people were like making shirts and stuff. It was literally like, I don't, you know, it's funny. I don't even remember what happened in the at-bat, but I know it ended in Madison Bumgarner yelling at Puig and telling him not to look at him. You know, they'd had a past. There'd been history between the two of them. And I guess Madison thought that Puig looked at him funny, and that became a whole thing. But it just, in retrospect, it's hilarious. Just don't look at me. That's probably my favorite in terms of ones that I've actually seen.
Yeah, I'd have to say that mine also includes Madison
Bumgarner. There's a surprise.
This was in 2010. He was in AAA. He charged the ump.
Oh, my God.
He charged the ump for blowing a stolen base call. He thought that the runner was out, and it was the second runner he thought was out. and Bumgarner just charges the ump at second base, and he has to be restrained by Eugenio Velez, who is like this very tiny, lanky guy, and he's trying to break it apart, trying to get Bumgarner off the ump. And then Bumgarner walks back into the dugout. He still has the game ball in his hand, and he throws the game ball into the outfield, and he's suspended for 3 games after that.
Oh, my goodness.
I think he was called up 2 weeks after that, and then, you know, he's been in the big leagues since, but I think there's only one video of that brawl to exist on YouTube, but there is proof of it, so it happened.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's good. I guess I'd also have to throw out Canada-Mexico in the 2013 WBC.
Yeah, Luis Cruz freaking out on people.
Yeah. It's like, you don't want to get into a fight with a bunch of people that played hockey growing up.
Mm. Yeah, probably not. So, yeah, there's been a lot of bizarre brawls in history, but I don't think anything tops the fire in Boston.
Yeah, and hopefully nothing will. I don't think any of us actually want to see that.
Hopefully not.
It helps that like stadiums nowadays don't allow fans to bring in pyrotechnics. And
there's an idea.
So hopefully nothing like that happens.
Yeah.
But baseball's unpredictable.
True. You can't predict baseball.
That's what they say.
All right. Do you guys have anything else? Any other big topics you guys want to discuss that happened this week?
Did we want to talk about the interview?
Yeah, we can mention that. I couldn't find the actual interview still, but essentially Nesson interviewed 3 former AAG PBL players during Sunday's game, and they were talking about everything that they have done to get young girls involved in baseball. And it was completely amazing. And they just kind of went on and on about how young girls in a whole bunch of tournaments have had to fight their way in and have just taken out, like, you know, hundreds of boys teams. And it was just like, I was just loving it. Like, the entire thing was phenomenal. So I wish I could find that online to share with you guys, because it was...
There's another one with them.
There is another one, yeah.
Yeah, and I watched that one. I like that a lot. I think it's awesome that these ladies still care so much about getting girls involved with baseball. They're, out there advocating for that because, you know, it is a matter of making opportunities available because historically, such opportunities have been limited. And it's great to see that of late there seems to be a real push to change that.
Totally. I mean, when I went down to the Trailblazer Series, which was the girls' baseball tournament put on by, I believe, a combination of MLB and Team USA, but I could be wrong, Shirley Berkovich and I believe Maybelle Blair.
Yeah, they were two of the women here as well.
Okay. Yeah, I met them at the Trailblazer Series, and they were just so happy that there were almost 100 girls playing a high level of baseball. You know, there were teams split up 12 and under and 16 and under, and these girls were just blowing people away. You know, they had amazing curveballs. There were, you know, there was on the 16 and under team, I think, you know, a 13-year-old or something around there was throwing 63 with a curveball that was nasty. You know, these girls sacrificing everything. Like, they didn't care what was going on. They would just throw their body around to catch the ball and make the play at home. Great fundamentals. And it's really just trying to find an opportunity for them to play. And I feel like it's so important just to have this tournament there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so inspiring to see that they're still so passionate about this and so committed to getting young girls the opportunities that they didn't have.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that a lot of the girls at the Trailblazer Series, like, their goal is making Team USA. And a lot of them tell me, you know, a lot of the, even the women's national baseball team, they say, oh yeah, a lot of people haven't heard that we exist. You know, they know that there's a national softball team for women, but not that there's a national baseball team. And they didn't field a team this year. I don't think there's anything international going on this year for women's baseball. But, you know, in the years that there is something going on, there is a women's baseball team, and they're pretty dang good.
Okay. Do you guys want to read out some of the tweets about signature games?
Oh, yeah. So a topic that came up. So today's Dodger game started. Chase Utley hit a triple in the second inning, hit a double in his next at-bat. Third at-bat, got hit by a pitch. I thought, if he hits a home run, can we count the hit by pitch as the single? And I got a reply from Mary suggesting that that should be a Chase Utley cycle, you know, kind of akin to the Gordie Howe hat trick. You know, so we then decided, you know, what sort of special events in a game could be named after a player, a particular player, you know, based on what you expect to see from them or what you're most likely to see from them.
Okay, so I guess we should probably go through the ones that we came up with first, because the ones that are Twitter. So we put this question out to Twitter and got some responses, and I think theirs are probably better than ours are. So we came up with a Mike Trout game. I would include a diving catch, two home runs, and because he's so kind and sweet, he would assist an elderly woman in the stands to find her seat.
One of the things I suggested, I was thinking about a game in which all three of the true outcomes are one of the true outcomes, you know, either a strikeout, a walk, or a home run is achieved in every plate appearance, although at least one of them has to be a home run for it to count. And I decided it should be called the Miguel Sano, because he currently is on pace for the highest three true outcomes percentage ever. He's at like 60% or something. No one has ever gone a full season with it being that high. So we'll name it after him for now.
All right. And then I had one for Hanley that would include a wild swing and a miss that would be so forceful his helmet would pop off, as well as a rocket home run to left, and then a toot bland. Because, you know, especially in the game tonight, he got thrown out trying to steal.
I'm glad to hear that the helmet loss is still happening with Hanley. It was a constant issue for him in L.A.
It's slightly better this season than it was last season. I don't know. Maybe because, like, his hair is longer or something. I'm not sure. But it's still, you know, a fairly frequent occurrence, of course.
Speaking of toot blands, I suggested the Yasiel Puig, which includes a toot bland, an unbelievable outfield assist, and being annoyed at getting walked, because nobody gets more annoyed at getting walked than Yasiel Puig. He hates it.
That's true.
And I would say that the Nick Punto is getting a single by diving headfirst into first, and probably a toot bland somewhere in the game.
And ripping off someone's jersey after a game.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, and so from our wonderful and brilliant Twitter followers, we have the Mark Reynolds, which is a 460-foot homer, four strikeouts, and a dropped foul pop-up, of course. And the Anthony Rizzo, a home run, hit by pitch, and catching a foul pop-up on a tarp.
One of the suggestions that I got was the Ricky being Ricky, which is a leadoff home run, two walks, stealing third base, and executing a snatch catch. So that is a term.
And then to kind of bring this at least a little bit full circle, we have the Bryce Harper, which is a walk-off bomb that turns into a benches clearing brawl as soon as he touches home plate.
That's very fitting.
Very, very fitting.
Okay, I think that about covers everything we wanted to talk about this week.
Yeah, so thank you for listening to the first episode of Hardball Times Audio. We'd like to thank our opening and closing music, which is called Jazz Comedy from Ben Sound. And you can find me on Twitter at Jen Mac Ramos. You can find Sarah on Twitter at SarahWexler32. And you can find Mary at Mary M. Craig on Twitter. You can find all the articles that we've listed here today at hardballtimes.com. And you can catch the latest article posted at Hardball Times every morning. And you can follow Hardball Times on Twitter at @Hardball_Times. I'm Jen Mac Ramos, and have a good day.